One tenet of life in these United States is that what you do in the privacy of your own home is your own business. That basic belief is protected and sometimes compromised by a complex and constantly evolving web of laws and interpretations of the Constitution. In Columbus, Ohio, earlier this month, a man named Brian Dalton pleaded guilty to child pornography charges based on his writings in a private journal. Dalton had previously been convicted for pandering pornographic images of children, and his journal was found during a legal search of his home by a probation officer. Dalton faced the new charges, although there was no evidence he had shared the journal with anyone or that he intended to distribute it in any way. Mimi Wesson teaches at the University of Colorado Law School and regularly explains legal issues for us. In this case, we wanted to know more about the privacy issues raised, as well as the Ohio law used to charge Dalton.
The Ohio law apparently banned any depiction of a child engaged in explicit sexual activity. It wasn't limited by its terms to visual depictions, and so the probation officer took the view that his verbal depictions violated the law. Since he pleaded guilty, we'll never know whether a court would have agreed with this view.
So it's not a matter of maybe how lurid these fantasies are, but the fact that he wrote them down.
Yes. By all accounts, they were very lurid, very upsetting, very disturbing. But what makes them different from the kind of child pornography that's of most concern is that no child was involved in the creation of these materials. Unlike videotapes, films, still photographs that require the exploitation or use of children as models or as performers, this kind of material, purely verbal, doesn't require the use of any children at all. So the justification that's usually given for giving child pornography very little, if any, constitutional protection, that actual children are harmed while it's being made, doesn't really apply to these materials.
Given that you said he pleaded guilty and there won't be a court case, it still seems to tie in with a lot of issues regarding privacy, and the Supreme Court is hearing cases based on privacy. Can you draw any parallels?
Yes, I think so. There's a very important freedom of speech case that's going to be before the court in its next term, which begins next October. Congress in 1996 passed a federal statute that prohibited the dissemination or creation or possession of child pornography, and it was defined in such a way that it included any visual depiction that is or appears to be one of a minor engaging in sexually explicit conduct. Now, notice that even this law doesn't go as far as the Ohio statute that banned Mr. Dalton's journals, because those were purely verbal. They weren't visual. But the federal law, even though confined to visual materials, still goes way too far for many civil libertarians, because it would apply to, for example, computer-generated images that appear to be of minors, or images that were created by using adult models or performers who appear to be younger than 18. So in a case that the court will decide next term, the constitutionality under the First Amendment of this federal statute is going to be considered.
What about the issue of privacy, however? I mean, the Supreme Court did rule that it was an invasion of privacy without a court-ordered search warrant when they were using those thermal imaging techniques to say that a man had been growing marijuana and enter the house.
Exactly. That was an extraordinary case, in part because the author of the majority opinion was Justice Scalia, and voting with him was Justice Thomas. These two justices are important not just because they're two of the nine current Supreme Court justices, but because President George W. Bush has said if he has an opportunity to appoint other members of the court, he'd like to appoint more just like Scalia and Thomas. And these two have been, in a way that I think is not generally understood, real privacy warriors on this court. They have taken a very strong view toward the protection of personal privacy in a series of recent cases. In some of them, they were in the majority. In some, they were dissenting, but they're real protectors of privacy.
Mimi Wesson teaches at the University of Colorado Law School. Her latest mystery novel is called Chilling Effect, and she joined us from Boulder. Thank you, Mimi.
Thank you, Leanne.